Hello, and welcome to another episode of Equipping the Corps. The Marine Corps is aggressively modernizing to meet the threats of the future battlefield. Lethality is crucial for the individual Marine to be successful, but so is mobility across the full range of military operations. At the heart of that mobility is the new Joint Tactical Vehicle Fleet. They provide our warfighters multi-mission role ground combat, tactical, and support vehicles. However, it's not just the JLTV, the entire tactical wheel fleet is evolving as part of Force Design 2030. The Marine Corps' Light Tactical Vehicle program has the unique mission of divesting of the legacy high-mobility multipurpose wheel vehicles, fielding more JLTVs and replacing the Marine Corps' utility task vehicle with an ultralight tactical vehicle. Today, I'm happy to have Jen Moore on the podcast to give us an update on all of that and more. Jen is the program manager for light tactical vehicles in our logistics combat element systems portfolio. Wow, that's a mouthful. Couldn't get it all out. Jen, welcome. Before we get started, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how long you've been here?
Thanks, Manny. Appreciate you having me here today. So I've been with the command a little over 11 years. Before I worked with the command, I worked in industry, specifically computer science. I was a software developer, kind of took a little bit of a change.
Wow, I'll say software development to vehicles.
Absolutely, yeah. It's always been a love of mine. My dad didn't have sons, so my sister and I spent a lot of time with him in the garage, and I've been in love with cars and trucks ever since.
Awesome. Well, that's fantastic. Well, it sounds like you ended up in the right place then. These are probably a little bit bigger than the car you'll fit in your garage. I want to get started and discuss our Humvee fleet. Obviously, it's been around for a long time and we're starting to divest of it. I know the program office has been doing quite a bit of that work. How's that going? Can you tell us a little bit about the process and what does this divestment mean for the fleet?
Absolutely. So, divestment of the Humvees is very much so one for one with every JLTV that we field. So as a new JLTV is in the process of being fielded, the receiving owning unit with the Humvee that's expecting a JLTV brings their Humvee. There's harvesting that occurs of equipment that's going to be reused onto the JLTV, and then the resultant Humvee is divested of. So the divestment approach that we have selected is equipment exchange.
Okay.
So in partnership with industry, these vehicles are demilitarized. We certify that they are in fact demilitarized and they're put up for auction, again, through partnership with industry. And the value that is recouped during that auction process is returned to us in the form of credits. So there's no dollars being returned, but value is. So we're able to go after parts, potentially to fill the need of an engineering change proposal, but it goes after pieces and parts to help with our tactical wheeled fleet, whether it's to support the Humvee, a JLTV, or another member of our tactical wheeled fleet.
So that's outstanding. So we're obviously taking the dollars that we can harvest from those vehicles and put it back into other vehicles. I do like the part about going to auction because that means I could potentially put one in my garage after all.
Absolutely.
It just won't be the up-armored Humvee that I may have ridden in a time or two. So how much longer do you anticipate the Humvees being around? I guess that question's probably a two-part.
Yeah, so right now the intention is likely we will have Humvees in a declining quantity within the Marine Corps until 2030.
Okay.
Force Design 2030 is in order to meet the Commandant's expectations and how we are evolving, how the tactical wheeled fleet is being employed. It's causing some things to shift left and shift right. So we're being very flexible in accommodating those goals.
So if I understand you correctly, the Marine Corps has been making some adjustments in order to meet the Commandant's vision for 2030. I think over the last couple years, we've had some fluctuations in the numbers. And hopefully in the next 2 or 3 years, we'll have a little more stability on what the future looks like. But That's a great point. I mean, everything is on the table right now. Where the Marine Corps is going to be in 2030 is on the table right now. So both on our numbers of Marines as well as our numbers of vehicles. So you're in charge of the light tactical vehicle fleet. Can you tell us what that fleet encompasses?
Sure, absolutely. It's over 20,000 pieces of rolling stock.
Wow.
Within the Marine Corps, ranging from our recently fielding of JLTVs to also include Humvees, their complementary light tactical trailer. Again, that's our legacy light tactical trailers. Then we also have the utility task vehicle, or the UTV. And soon, in second half of this year, we'll be seeing the ultralight tactical vehicle replacing those UTVs that are aging out.
Well, I'm excited to discuss that. I'm going to save that conversation for a little bit, but I've always liked the UTV. It's a great little off-road capability, very diverse. So I'm looking forward to getting into a conversation about what the ULTV will bring to the table. But first and foremost, let's talk about the JLTVs. I believe they went into full-rate production last summer, so you've got a little over a year that you've had them out to the fleet. What's the feedback been like from the fleet?
So that's a great question. The Marines are learning to love the truck. I would say if you go back and look at information about when we fielded the Humvee 10,000 years ago, similar feedback. It's too big. It's too complex. It's too heavy. I don't know how to maintain it. You drive it differently. We have the exact same feedback with JLTV, but the good news is it's not too big. It's not too complex. The Marines are learning how to operate this vehicle safely, effectively, as well as maintaining it on their own in an organic manner. By organic, I mean they're able to maintain it without having a member of industry telling them, no, this tool, put it there.
Right.
So they're... The learning curve is increasing at a rapid rate.
Well, in today's Marine, I believe most of today's Marines are born with an iPad in their hands, and this vehicle brings that kind of capability. Well, first of all, I don't want to date myself, but I do recall when I had to give up my Willys Jeep and transition into a Humvee, and being a not so big individual that I am, it was a rather large vehicle, so I can relate to the conversation. But also, having been in a JLTV, I can relate to the incredible technology and capability that vehicle brings. So I know you've ridden in it a time or two, but can you share with us some of your experiences and some of your feedback as far as the technology, the ability to maintain the vehicle? Can you give us a little more insight into that?
Absolutely. So I would say the biggest takeaway from a first person having an opportunity to ride in a Humvee and then have an immediate following ride in a JLTV is, wow. That's usually the first impression.
Is it the bumping all over the road? Oh, wait, that's the Humvee.
Yeah,
sorry.
So it's the smoothness.
Okay.
So is it still loud? Yeah, it's somewhat loud inside, but not nearly as loud as what we've been accustomed to in a Humvee. It has fantastic air conditioning. It even has cup holders. But I will tell you, though, from a human factors perspective, when we have our Marines fully combat loaded in this vehicle, going to where they need to go in order to execute their mission, they're not becoming fatigued as a part of either operating the vehicle or being an occupant in the vehicle, because it is addressing those human factors that are necessary in order to make sure they are prime and ready to execute their mission once they arrive at their destination. That is probably one of the single most greatest benefits of the vehicle in my opinion.
Well, I think that's a great point, because not that I'm older or anything, but the more cushion I have in my car seat nowadays, the more comfortable I am. And having ridden in a JLTV, I can certainly attest to the quality of the ride. So you bring up a great point. I mean, mobility is key to survivability, but so is the importance of keeping our Marines ready for the fight. and going on a hour or two drive in a Humvee as opposed to an hour or two drive in a JLTV, I'm probably going to be ready for the fight in one and maybe not in the other so much.
Yeah, it's a night and day difference.
Wow. That's interesting. How about the maintainability? I know we talked about young Marines nowadays are literally born with an iPad in their hands. How does that translate to what they're going to encounter in a JLTV?
It's a great question. So the heart of the JLTV is the Driver Smart Display Unit, or the DSDU. So the DSDU, it's the heart, it's the brains of the vehicle. Anything that is going on with that vehicle, you're going to be able to pull it immediately from that screen. So yes, you know, you're going to have that technology is up front, rather than I'm going to see something that's leaking, I'm going to identify what is leaking, or I'm going to smell something. The first thing you're going to truly be doing is looking at what is the DSDU, or that Driver Smart Display Unit, telling me that's going on with my truck. And from that, I continue my analysis. So it is definitely high tech. It is not low tech. It has, of course, your typical low tech aspect, because it is an internally combustion engine, or as they're saying, ICE these days.
Right.
Because, you know, we've got EV, electric vehicles. So now we have to call old school technology something cool. So it's ICE.
Well, I don't want to take you back a few years, but I think this satisfies both your computer programming and your, you know, kicking the tires at the same time. So now you have all of that in your garage.
Absolutely.
What are the challenges? Are you getting challenges from the fleet that, you know, there are things they're having a hard time overcoming?
So I would say the challenges are just that. It is a brand new vehicle with modern day automotive technology being presented into the Marine Corps that does not necessarily have modern day technology across our fleet of light tactical vehicles or our wheeled vehicles. Probably the same type of feedback that our Amtrakers are having with the ACV replacing the AAV. It is truly it's a remarkable injection of current day relevant technology that is still scalable for the future.
So it's that old age old challenge of going from an analog system to a high tech digital world.
Absolutely.
It's like my father having to give up his rotary phone for a new smartphone. I think that's fascinating. And again, today's young Marine just seem to make that transition without much of a thought at all. Do you see, from a maintainability standpoint, is it having an impact on the maintenance units? Are the maintenance folks able to have that, you know, the issues with the vehicle ready at hand when they pull into the bay and say, hey, this is where I need to go, because the machine's already telling me, here's what you got to fix.
So I wouldn't say that it's so much the maintainers having an issue. It's the supply chain keeping up.
Oh, okay.
So for instance, you know, COVID has had impacts in our supply chain. There's no way to get away from that.
Right, right.
And so delays that we may see are due to delays of spares being available. Now, we are working very aggressively to make spare parts available, you know, at rapid pace, even if that means we're pulling from our stocks to support production. But I would say that the maintainers, they're stepping up. They're making it happen. We do have, we'll call them gray beards, but we do have members of industry that are giving them that over the shoulder support so that they can have that higher degree of confidence and know that what they are doing, that they're spot on.
I'm glad you said that, because change gears real quick. Can you give us an overview of what happens when a unit's about to receive their first JLTVs? Kind of walk us through the support they're getting or the support they're going to continue to get for a while.
Absolutely. So we make sure, first and foremost, that they have an appropriate density of trained operators. And some of these infantrymen that are coming in may have had their driver's license for 72 hours.
So tell us, what's the difference on the training? How long is the driver's training?
So the driver's training is 1 week long.
Okay.
And the majority of that is all hands. It's on hand, rather,
right.
Behind the steering wheel. Trying to teach somebody how to operate this vehicle with a PowerPoint isn't very effective. And we've been able to continue with the operating or the operations training, mm-hmm. Even during COVID. So it's been a challenge, definitely.
So the trainers are going to the locations?
Absolutely. We have trainers on location at each of our fielding locations.
Wow.
And so it's a complex scenario that we execute continuously, globally, around the Marine Corps, all of the time. We are fielding at all of our locations all of the time. It's not like we're doing a stab and just going after one location. It's all locations all of the time.
So, and again, I know this is, we're part of a joint program with the Army. Mm-hmm. So it's not just us getting these vehicles, it's the Army getting these vehicles as well. Can you touch a little bit on the relationship that we have to the Army and maybe some comparisons on how much we fielded so far?
Absolutely. So yes, we are the Joint Light Tactical Vehicle. So we do have a joint partnership with the Army. And our partnership is fantastic. While our fielding methodology is different, mm-hmm. Because the Army goes more after a stabbing type of a fielding, where they identify single points and they field, and then they move to that next point.
Oh, I got you. I got you.
We also have differed a little bit in that we have a consolidated fielding point where we bring the vehicles from the manufacturer. Mm-hmm. We apply all of the changes that need okay. to happen to that vehicle. We address any quality issues that may be occurring with that vehicle at that time. Okay. And then we send it to its final destination, whether it's, you know, Camp Lejeune, or we're going all the way out to one of the camps in Okinawa.
Okay.
But what we're finding with this approach, which, by the way, it mirrors what MRAP used as well. So I'd like for the team to take credit that we came up with this, but it was a good idea by another. So we're stealing, AKA we're leveraging. But what we've done is, by the time those vehicles show up at their final destination, it's days, not weeks, before the owning unit receives those vehicles.
Oh, that's outstanding.
So that was feedback that we took from the fleet, where they, you know, they're seeing this iron mountain of JLTVs that are arriving, and it's weeks upon weeks upon weeks before they actually are fielded.
Oh,
so we've taken that out. By the time that truck arrives, they're just going through their operator new equipment training so that they can receive those vehicles. It is that quick.
Wow. That's awesome. That's incredible. So you mentioned harvesting equipment from the Humvees. I'm wondering if we can, is that equipment going into JLTVs? And if so, what types of equipment are making the transition from some of our Humvees to the JLTVs?
So that's a great question. So for instance, our gunner protection kits,
mm-hmm.
they are being transferred from the Humvee onto our heavy guns carrier. We're not buying all new equipment to support our heavy guns. And so the only thing that we've had to then purchase is that little integration piece between the gunner's protection kit and the JLTV.
Oh, okay.
And in many instances, we used equipment exchange funds.
I was just gonna, you're way ahead of me
exactly.
on that one. So you're using that funding we already saved.
Absolutely.
So I'm gonna put in a plug. Good stewards of taxpayer dollars.
Absolutely.
It's fantastic. Are we getting that equipment ahead of time, pre-positioned? How does that work? And where is this work being done, if you can talk to that?
Sure, yeah. So the work is being done in a variety of places.
Okay.
We have work that's being done on site. This, you know, for instance, the installation of the gunner protection kit could be something that is happening at the fielding location, not the consolidated point. But for the most part, you know, most of the installation of gear is occurring in our consolidated location. But when we have equipment that needs to be harvested on site, it is done on site at the fielding location with the specific Marine Expeditionary Force.
Okay. So you mentioned COVID earlier and the impacts to the supply chain. I know, for instance, the auto industry is struggling with chips and things of that sort. Have you seen that impact down at your level? And if
Absolutely.
so, do you expect that to?
Sure. So, chips, steel, rubber for tires, they're all being impacted. And so, of course, we need to make sure that the parts are being procured from authorized sources. And so that does generate delays. It absolutely does. I will say, though, that our partners in industry, they are keeping their thumb on this pulse. And it's not to be reactive, they're being proactive. And if they have to go after bigger buys in order to anticipate future shortfalls or future delays in product, they're doing so, and many times at risk.
Wow. Well, that's great to hear. I don't want to get into specific numbers, but can you just give us an idea, roughly by the end of the year, say December time frame, how many JLTVs do you anticipate the Marine Corps will own by that time?
So instead of own, because there's a difference between how many we've bought versus how many we have fielded, because it
That's
takes
a great
time,
point.
right? I mean, because when we buy, it's before it's been built.
Right.
So you know, that's when we request, put our request in, hey, we want to buy these. So I would say by the end of this year, we'll have well over 2,500 that will have been fielded within the Marine Corps. And
Awesome.
that's taking away those one-for-one Humvees.
Wow. So you mentioned we discussed trailers briefly. I've got my JLTV. I got everybody in. I got all my gear, but now I need to take some additional gear. Tell us what's happening with the trailer program. I understand we've jumped boat feet first into a program that's going to bring us a trailer to support that JLTV.
Absolutely. So yes, the Marines are not excited about having a legacy trailer being towed behind a JLTV, as that JLTV has to be driven like a Humvee. Otherwise, there's no trailer left behind if the JLTV drives like a JLTV. So the companion trailer for the JLTV, we're pretty excited about it. It'll start fielding in second half of this year. And again, joint venture with the Army. And so we're finalizing our testing right now and going to go forward with our request for fielding decision.
So I think the great thing about us doing all these things jointly, I'm assuming economy of scale is keeping that price point down a little
Absolutely,
bit.
yes. We share in all of the R&D expenses. It reduces our time. And yes, it does make it more affordable.
That's great news. Looking forward to that trailer. Let's shift gears a little bit. We've talked about the big. Let's go down and get a little bit smaller. So we've had a UTV now for the last 3, 4, close to 5 years, if I'm not mistaken. Great little vehicle, complimentary logistics vehicle from what I understand. What's in store for that vehicle? And tell us what's new.
Thanks, I appreciate that. So the UTV, we began fielding in 2017, and it's a 5-year life cycle, non-developmental product. And the intention behind
So
that.
just to clarify, non-developmental, basically you can run down to the local UTV store and buy one.
Kind of,
All
but not
right.
really. So essentially what that means is that the government has not invested
Okay.
significant research and development dollars
That's a great point.
in order to develop the capability. We're going after state of the shelf. What is available today that can meet the requirements of today's force? So with the UTV, we began fielding in 2017, and it was as a result of an urgent UNS that had come through, a universal needs statement that
Right,
had come
right.
through. 5 years life, and the reason for 5 years, we wanted to make sure it had adequate supply chain to be able to support that vehicle. The ultralight tactical vehicle, we're following somewhat of the philosophy that was used with the UTV, but instead of coming in later, we have partnered. It's not a joint relationship as we have with the Army for the JLTV, but it is a codified partnership with SOCOM,
Okay.
with the Program Manager for Family of Special Operations Vehicles,
Wow.
where the Marine Corps adopted SOCOM's requirements for their light tactical all-terrain vehicle, sprinkled in unique Marine Corps requirements, and together between SOCOM and the Marine Corps, my program office, we've been going after this capability. So SOCOM has taken on the procurement lead,
Okay.
We have taken the testing lead. And so the next vehicle that is, it's going to start being fielded in third quarter of this fiscal year.
Wow.
We've wrapped up most of our testing. We're working on transportation certifications. And
does that mean I can ride one this summer, this coming summer?
Yes.
Okay.
Once it's fielded. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. The feedback that we're getting from the Marines that have been a part of our operational assessment and our various validation and verification actions has been, when are we getting these? How many are we getting? Can we get them faster? So there's almost no limit to what the Marines are wanting to do with these vehicles, specifically with integrating capabilities. Mm. Whether it's a network on the move, whether we want to use it to carry the launching capability for small UAS, systems, or the lightweight Marine Air Defense Integrated System, LMATIS. Wow. On top of its initial intent is to that of lightening the load of the Marine.
Right.
So logistics is its backbone. And then CASAVAC still of two wounded Marines, is its primary and secondary purpose. So,
will it still be internally transportable
absolutely.
To our 53?
Yep. It's actually the V-22. So
okay.
It's MV-22
right.
internally transportable. Wow. And it's going to have over 1,800 pounds of payload. So that's an increase
wow.
from the UTV, which was 1,500. It'll have 24 inches of fording and at no less than 12 inches of clearance from underneath the vehicle. Even when it's at full payload, it's not going to, drag down.
So I'm assuming a little bigger tires and whatnot
yes.
from the current system.
Yes.
Wow,
yes.
That's great. You mentioned something I want to focus back on a little bit. You talked about Marines doing field user evaluation. Can you enlighten us a little bit? I mean, a lot of people may have the perception that we had a bunch of engineers and some acquisition people, and they get together and say, hey, this is a great capability. But you do a lot more than that when you're looking to field a new capability.
Absolutely. So getting end user feedback all the time, it's paramount. And it doesn't just start with the testing of a vehicle once it's been selected. It starts well before then. So for instance, all of the feedback that we received on the utility task vehicle was included with, to industry when we were working to identify, who is going to be able to manufacture this
right,
greater capability.
Right.
And so manufacturers and industry, they listen. They want to know, what can we do to our vehicle in order to meet or exceed those expectations?
So you've been building on this library of feedback on the UTV, the version that's outgoing, for the last 4 or 5 years then.
Yes.
So it's a constantly...
It is.
So
I'll give you a good example, and I know I'm jumping back to the JLTV, but
this was a
simple one, and actually I had just learned about it in the last couple of weeks. There's a cutout in the seat back of the JLTV, and I had no idea what it was for, and then I learned it's so that we do not essentially blow the water bladder that is sitting on the back of the Marine, because it sits outside
their camelback.
Yes, yeah,
yes.
I mean, to put a label on it, but it sits outside of their armor.
Wow.
And so when they would sit inside the vehicle, and it's them, their armor,
right.
their water, and then the seat back, they were crushing the water. You don't want to lose your water.
So again, make a comparison between my old Jeep and the ergonomics of today's vehicle, night and day, and you
Absolutely.
Can't even begin to
but that was immediate imagine. Feedback that was taken.
Wow.
And so now we don't lose our water.
Oh, that's fantastic. What's your expected life cycle for the ULTV?
So right now, it's still 5 years.
Okay.
And it's not because there's concerns of supply chain. We have been given guidance from the manufacturer that they're going to stand by their product for at least 7 years. So what we're looking at is corrosion.
Okay.
We work in a maritime environment. We have salt water, we have salt fog, we have salt spray. So we're doing some corrosion testing on this vehicle. And if we can extend beyond 5 years, we will. If we can't, then in a safe manner, then we won't. Safety is paramount.
So corrosion is a wonderful topic, and I think one for a future podcast, because I think folks would be astonished at the amount of work that goes into ensuring that our vehicles and their fenders and everything else is survivable, not just dealing with the salt that we get on 95, but the salt that we get in the Atlantic or Pacific or other. Well, that's fantastic feedback. So again, you're looking to field sometime in the second quarter?
Third quarter,
yeah. of this next year.
Yes.
Looking forward to it, and I'm sure the Marines out in the fleet. Now, I just want to kind of go back to a Humvee JLTV analogy, because I know we had a couple of hundred UTVs. Is this a one-for-one exchange, or are these being looked at for different units, different capabilities?
Yeah, so we're fielding quite a bit more than the UTVs that we have fielded. It's still going after our infantry and our reconnaissance, but in support of Force Design 2030, mm-hmm. that is definitely forcing the hand of who is going to be fed first, what capabilities we're looking at integrating into the vehicle, prioritizing as such. So very similar to what we're doing with JLTV, but on a much, much smaller truck.
Gotcha. You mentioned industry paying attention and listening to some of the issues or lessons learned, shall we say, that you've had on some of these vehicles. What's your engagement with industry? How often do you engage and have these conversations with them?
I meet with industry weekly, sometimes daily. It just depends on the time of the year. But I will tell you, industry is eager. They are eager. They know that we are making investments. They know that we're modernizing our light tactical fleet. We have their ear. They are listening, and they're also giving us recommendations and their guidance of how they are seeing the future continue to unfold within essentially the tactical wheeled environment, to also include the concerns, like I've talked about, availability of steel, availability of chips, rubber. These are all real things. It's not just an excuse to be late for something.
Right.
It's real. It's palpable.
So they want to be part of the solution.
They do.
They want to be part of this Force Design 2030 as much as we do. Well, it's great to hear. Listen, Jen, this has been extremely informative. I hope folks get a better understanding of what's in your plate day in and day out, from the little vehicle, which is not so little, to the big vehicle. I believe you called it a mountain of steel when it comes out. But it's really incredible and fascinating to see the evolution of our tactical wheel vehicle capability. And there's some exciting times ahead. I know I'm excited about getting a ride in that ULTV, as I'm sure Marines out in the fleet are. So I really appreciate you taking the time and joining us. But before I let you go, I've come to my favorite part, and that is our lightning round. So are you up for it?
Totally. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
All right. Let's do this.
Okay.
I got to ask, what's your favorite vacation spot?
That's a great question and a really hard question to answer. I'll tell you, it's anywhere my husband and I take our Airstream.
Ah, outstanding. An RVer. First class RVer, I may say. So what's a TV show, book, movie, or a podcast you'd recommend?
I'm going to recommend a book.
Okay.
So it's written by Garth Stein, and it's The Art of Racing in the Rain.
Wow.
It's a fantastic book. It's a story about love, which is wonderful, resilience, and of course, race car driving. And it's all told from the perspective of a dog.
I can see there's a little bit of that in your blood.
So. Yeah. So, and it's told from the perspective of a dog, and I love dogs as well.
Oh, wow.
It's an outstanding book. I know they've made a movie. I haven't seen the movie, because sometimes after you've read the book, a movie spoils it. I highly recommend the book.
Well, that's awesome. I look forward to it. I'm going to have to add that one to my list. If you weren't doing this now, what would you be doing?
So if I was not a civil servant working as a PM, I would, if money was not of concern, I would say I would be the very best wine pourer at a winery. Because folks are happy. I'm talking about something I absolutely love. And it's a fantastic environment. Everybody's happy.
So adventure, I guess, but I'm just saying they call, what is that saying they have? Napa sells auto parts, Virginia sells wine. So I'm assuming you've gone out on the wine trail here a little bit.
Absolutely.
I thought you were going to say a race car driver, but that's okay. That's a different life. And last but not least, a very important one. If you could have any superpower, what would it be?
So I thought about that one, and I'll tell you, enhanced memory. I have a terrible time with remembering names. Like on the spot, I need to remember a name. I will draw a blank. 10 minutes later, I'll remember the name. Or at 11 o'clock that night, I'll remember the name. But if I had enhanced memory where I could just go back through little index cards in my brain, that would be fantastic.
Listen, if you find that, please share it with me.
Will do.
My wife will tell you it's horrendous. Who did I just meet? So anyway, listen, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time. I hope our audience enjoys the wealth of information you just provided on our tactical wheel vehicle fleets, and happy RVing.
Thank you. Thank you, Manny. Appreciate it.
Well, this concludes another episode of Equipping the Core. I hope you've enjoyed our conversation today. If so, please take a couple minutes, leave us a review, subscribe, tell your friends about us. Till next time, Manny Pacheco signing off.